Hi, I'm Mary Ann from Beverly Hills 90210.
And I'm Princess Carolyn from BoJack Horseman.
Welcome to the Bicons Podcast. Ding. Wow, look at this radio show quality. Wow,
wow. Would you look at that? Jesus Christ.
Unbeknownst to you, viewer.
Listener.
Unbeknownst to you, listener. We be struggling. Okay. This shit is difficult. Just so you know, we're in our living room. It's a very cute living room. You should come over sometime for some tea or something. I can make you a latte. It's not the typical podcast setup. There's a child here, and by child, I mean 3-year-old Shelty. But this is really fun. It's from the comfort of our own home. Yes. It's very COVID safe. Thank you. Very COVID safe, very socially distanced. Today we're going to be talking about Dead to Me, Netflix original with
Christina. I almost said Christina Aguilera. Dead to Me stars Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini, gay icon herself, who's not really gay, but we all accept her into the community for some reason. Dead to Me is written and created by Liz Feldman, who is queer herself. And Christina Applegate plays Jen Harding and Linda Cardellini plays Judy Hale.
Quick recap of what happened. I mean, this will be a very spoiler, as everything we do.
Yes.
But Jen Harding recently is a widow. Her husband was killed in a car accident. Wait, it's not called a car accident if he was a hit and run.
Hit and run, right.
Fuck.
Technically, it's a car accident.
It is technically a car accident.
I mean, it was an accident. He was hit by a car.
Pedestrian to car collision.
Sure.
Jesus. She's a real estate agent based in Laguna Beach, California, and she's trying to come to terms with the loss of her husband through therapy, exercise, and other methods, including blasting heavy metal in your car alone and crying.
Felt that.
She has extreme anger issues, and she's trying to work through them, so she goes to a therapy support group about, like, losing somebody. And there is where she meets Judy Hale, the sexiest cottagecore woman alive. And at the grief support group, Jen Harding doesn't know yet, but Judy is there specifically to meet her, not because she has lost someone in her life, per se. And it's like a big mystery thriller with like a dash of comedy, and it's like they're totally opposite people, but they end up as best friends. Maybe, in parentheses, maybe lovers. We don't know yet.
We don't know. We can hope.
But seasons 1 and 2 are out right now, and they're delicious. They're delectable.
I saw someone in an article describe it as, instead of a dramedy, they called it a traumedy.
Oh my god!
Because it very much is that. It's like traumatic experience after traumatic experience.
Traumedy.
But my luckily,
life is a traumedy.
Yes. Luckily, Judy and Jen have each other, though.
Yeah, they're cute as hell together. They're like complete opposites. The Pisces and the Scorpio.
Yes. The water sign friendship of our dreams.
You know how they say, like, fuck saying top or bottom. Tell me who talks to the host at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Or, like, who talks to the waitress or host at the restaurant. Jen is very much that type of bitch. And Judy's very much the type of bitch to be like, no.
Yeah, Jen says exactly what's on her mind at all times. And, like, she is not to be fucked with.
Precisely. Very badass bitch type of brand.
Whereas, like, Judy's, like, nice and, like, she wants everyone to have a good day and, like...
She's literally, like, an arts and crafts...
teacher or something or other.
Teacher at a long-term care facility.
Yeah.
That is literally an angel. Just an angel.
However, Judy has a really bad history with male relationships. The first guy she's with is, like, an abusive piece of shit. And we get to see that throughout, like, the whole first season. And...
The Greek mafia.
Jesus. And Jen's there to kind of, like, egg her along. She's like, why are you still with this guy? It's kind of a nice... Not nice, obviously, but it's, like... It's, like, this portrayal of, like, abusive relationships that, like, you don't see, like, the aftermath of so much. Where it's, like, the person coming to the realization that the person was abusive. Like, post... Spoiler, post-mortem. and like still being in love with the person, but realizing they were bad and shit like that. And yeah, I really like that.
It's so complex like that when it talks about abusive relationships.
Yeah.
This covers a lot of shit. Losing somebody, having a monster mother-in-law, trying to reclaim your space, trying to reclaim your energy, trying to be a good parent, trying to co-parent with someone new, how to be nice when you struggle with being nice.
It's really like a study in like femininity, especially like with older women, because femininity still is like tied to reproduction and sexiness or just sex in general, and like how men perceive you. And like this tackles like assault, and which we will be calling, by the way, from now on, we'll be referring to sexual assault as SAs, just to make, you know, it a little less triggering every time we have to talk about it. But it tackles SAs, it tackles, like we said, abusive relationships, mansplaining of all ages. Like there's plenty of times where Jen calls out her own like 15-year-old son for being like a dick.
A jerk.
Yeah. You know? And then grief, and like Judy not being able to have children, even though that's like the one thing she wants to do, and like how it affects how she sees herself like as a woman because she can't have a baby. And like, but it not also like revolving around that, like nobody makes her feel like less of a woman. It's just something that like she struggles with internally. And like it also talks about Jen, whose mom died of breast cancer, so she had to get a mastectomy, and like how after
that's deep shit.
Yeah. And like how her husband didn't want to touch her and have sex with her anymore because she got a mastectomy, and how ashamed of that she felt.
Finding out he cheated on her after he died
with like a 22-year-old hot waitress. Like,
the way that unfolded, like they literally put this all together in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good. This is good. You need to watch it. It's so good.
I always thought it was so interesting how we never saw Ted, like ever. It's been like the whole two seasons, we don't even know what that man looked like.
It's just weird. We don't need to see how he looks.
No, fuck him.
Crispy motherfucker.
He killed her.
Exactly. Like, I don't even want to put a face to it. Maybe once they put a face to it, everybody would be like, oh my God, like I love him. Like he's so cute. Like, no, like he's just supposed to be a jerk that doesn't matter, that you're supposed to hate.
Yeah.
And on top of all of this, there are some people argue that there's some gay undertones between Jen and
for
Judy.
For sure.
It's very argued. I'm trying to stay very Switzerland on the topic, but I have thoughts, and I have a full and complete argument that I would like to present to you.
Go for it.
You want me to jump? You want me to jump?
Yeah, bro. Why not?
Oh, shit. Okay. So, obviously, spoilers. We already know Judy is bi. One.
Yes.
Period. Why was Judy in Jen's bed the morning Jen left to turn herself in?
When she had her own bed at the house.
She had her own bed, her own house, technically, guest house. Anyways, Judy loves Jen's kids. Jen's kids love Judy. Yes. They're literally co-parenting the shit out of those two cute-ass kids. Judy wants children and needs to help, and Jen has children and needs help. They killed each other's former male partners. You're telling me that this is not this was written by a lesbian, y'all.
Yes.
I would not be. I'm not like seriously like into this argument. I'm just saying like it's very fun to make this argument because like all the clues are there.
Yes.
Liz Feldman is a literal gay.
It's very, like, there's so many tropes intertwined in, like, Jen and Judy's relationship.
Right? And the whole ass, like, Victorian, old-ass trope of, like, let's kill our husbands and run away
together. Like the Black Widow type trope.
Is that what it's called? Black Widow?
I mean, that's when they purposely kill the husbands, but, you know.
Oh, true. Yeah, like, this is a twist on that, though, because they didn't die on purpose. It was, like, half accident. It just kind of happened.
Right.
I love that. This is great.
Yeah.
You sympathize with someone who's, like, quote unquote a killer, but they didn't really kill. Like, it has an intention to kill. Like, these people, I don't know.
I feel like
I don't see them as bad people.
No. In the first season, like, I always loved Judy, but I felt guilty for liking Judy for a long time because it was like, this woman has, you know, accidentally, but this woman has killed this man, hit it, and then infiltrated the victim's wife's life, moved into her house, got close to her children, got close to her, and I was like, this is psychopath behavior. And like for such a long time I was like, but she's so likable, but there's no way, like the other shoe has to drop here. And it just never did. Like, Judy's a good person, and she's just a little dumb sometimes.
Aren't we all?
Yeah,
we're in no place to judge.
I think she was just so overcome by guilt that she didn't know what to like do with herself. Like, I felt like she just got so taken over by like wanting to make it better that she just made a lot of bad choices. But I think both of them are really good people.
Definitely.
Yeah,
they both have really good intentions,
right?
And even for strangers,
and they want to take care of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, like even when they're mad at each other, they always forgive each other.
That's the thing. They always keep coming back to each other. Mm-hmm. They're literal partners in crime.
Yes.
In crime.
Ugh.
They know each other's like deepest, darkest secrets, you know? Like,
yeah.
A fucking grown man's body in a deep freezer in the garage type shit. No, I definitely think they would be amazing together. And I feel like a gay clown because it might not ever happen.
I know, because there's like this little thing where I kind of think Jen straight.
I know. I feel like she doesn't have a single fucking gay bone in her body.
Yeah, she just doesn't strike me that way.
She really does not seem gay. But everybody else is like making edits and like...
Right.
Half of me is just like, oh, cool. Like, it's like a beautiful, supportive, powerful fucking duo.
Yeah.
Like friendship, co-parenting. Like, you can co-parent with your best friend and like, it's like a vibe. Like, you don't have to... It's totally platonic. I get it.
Right.
But the other 50% of me is like, this was written by a literal lesbian. Can they be gay, please?
Yeah. And I think I read an article, I think on a website called Advocate, one or the other. And Liz Feldman, the creator, was like, I didn't necessarily write it that way. Like, I wrote it from like a powerful, like female friendship perspective. And like, I wanted it to be seen through a female lens and like a female perspective. And that's why I like most of the writers are female or gay. And like, and that's the other thing. Like, people behind the scenes, a lot of people behind the scenes are gay. So it's like there's gay people writing this content. And not that like gay people have to write gay stories, but you know what I mean? Like,
then we really don't know because right. You neither confirm nor deny.
But she did say that she can see why people are attached to this relationship and interpret the relationship in a gay way. Because like she's like, I see it. I'm gay. Like, I watch gay content. I watch content that's queer coded. I love television. I can see how the things that I'm writing, I see them in other things I watch, and I understand why people are interpreting that way. Yeah. And it kind of leaves it up in the air because she didn't flat out say, no, they're not. They're never going to be in a relationship. You know, she left it kind of vague.
Maybe it's because season 3 is coming out.
Right.
She's still waiting. I just hope that if she does decide to not make them like lovers and together, that people don't turn around and say, oh, this is queer baiting.
It's not queer baiting to me because Judy is actually queer. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that like the relationship can be seen as queer baiting, but normally that's kind of like reserved when it's like both people are straight or whatever. But like in True. This case, Judy is queer and she was in a queer relationship.
Yeah, with, I don't feel any queer baiting.
Me neither. It just feels like a really like tender friendship.
What's a good example of queer baiting?
I didn't watch it, but like the pinnacle example for me is Supernatural. And like I said, I didn't watch Supernatural, but I've been on Tumblr long enough to know with like Dean and what's his name, like Castiel or something like that. Like, it's, you know, when you have all of these really like the romantic framing and the like all or nothing type of relationship and like these lines that are usually like picked right out of like romantic storylines, and you know, and then in the end you don't actually put them together.
Yeah,
like you put all of the pieces there that would be interpreted as a relationship if it was a straight couple, but then you don't make it canon.
Okay, well guess what, that's exactly what this is though. You literally just described what we have here.
But I don't, a lot of it I don't interpret as romantic. I interpret it as like tender and like intimate and like that's, they have so a connection true. But I don't interpret it it's as not romantic
because they're not like, they're not doing any like physical
there's stuff. No like sexual tension,
yeah,
at all to me.
Then maybe they won't be together,
you know.
That's a very careful line.
Yeah. I think
that's good.
Another thing like Feldman said was it was important to her to like write a female friendship with like two powerful women where there was no cattiness or competition that so often like gets written into female relationships. And she was, and I think because we're not seeing that, it feels more intimate and like they have a deeper connection because we're not getting that like,
100%,
you know,
agree.
That shit that we're used to. So maybe it's
a deep
just,
connection that's just free.
Right. It's just a natural like friend soulmate type of situation, because in reality they're like life partners, and I feel like the only way for this series to, even though they're not romantic life partners, I could not see them like separating at the end of this series and not moving on together, you know.
That's why I really like that scene in the car where she's with Natalie Morales's character, Judy's with Michelle in the car, and Michelle was like, so you live with her and you guys aren't together? And she was like, I mean, not with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, wow, I wish we had more of that in TV.
And I think that's how you can tell the difference.
Normalize that. I know everybody's like, on TikTok is like, normalize this, normalize that. But like, normalize that. And maybe that's what she's doing here. Maybe that's what Liz Feldman is doing here.
That's where I'm like seeing the separation from like Judy and Jen versus Judy and Michelle, because like the sexual tension and like the romantic tension between Judy and Michelle was like immediate.
Yeah, Judy's like into her.
Right.
A lot.
The attraction was like right there the first time they met, honestly.
Maybe this is like a dissertation on like, hey, straight girls, when you have a gay friend, they are not into you.
Did you know that? Right.
Like, maybe that's kind of what this is getting at.
And Jen never thinks that Judy's into her either, which is great.
No, yeah. She would never assume that.
Yeah.
When Judy first edged that she was seeing Michelle, mm-hmm. Jen was like, oh my God, nice. Like, it's very cute. It's very regular. Wow. Yeah. God forbid.
Speaking of Michelle, talk about the love of my life.
I am asking formally for your hand in marriage, Natalie Morales. Hi, you can reach me on Instagram. Please sign into my DMs. Reject me so I can move on. Oh my God.
Queerness, like, with that second season was so, because Michelle doesn't get introduced until the second season.
And she also disappears in the second season.
Yeah, it's so like natural, like the transition into us finding out that Judy is queer is like so natural. It's not surprising. It's not talked about or like debated. There's no conflict. It's so like easy in a show where everything else is so hard and like traumatic and dramatic like all the time. This was so easy and like fun and cute, and I loved it.
But there's also like murder.
Yes.
Mother, I crave violence.
Right. And like the drama that does occur in their relationship doesn't have to do with either of them being queer.
No.
At all.
That's good. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
They really need each other.
Yeah.
Alternatively, though, with all of this said, like, yeah, they're probably not going to be shipped. It's fun to ship them.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's really cute.
Because you want them to be happy, that. You know? Like.
So yeah, I both ship and not ship them. I can't explain the terms and conditions to you. I don't know. I just think both.
I feel like when you see like a friendship that's like so pure and like supportive and like as intimate as they are, like you just want to root for it, because like you're like, when this ends, like I want them to be happy and they make each other happy, and like wouldn't it be nice if they were a couple, you know? But I love it too, but I just don't know if I see it actually happening.
I'm pleased with this too, because having it set up this way kills the argument of like, oh, gay girls can't have girlfriends.
Yeah.
Besties who are girls. Like,
I hate
this. This kills that argument. It squashes it. I don't know many other forms of media that are that, like, they're really sending that message.
Yeah.
I like that message.
Jen doesn't just assume that every woman is suddenly Judy's type because she knows she's into women now.
It's hardly talked about. I love that we're there.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, we live in a society.
We do. We live in a society.
I just want a chef girlfriend who brings me to the back of a restaurant and then surprises me with like a meal that she cooked in her fancy ass restaurant and then gives me a crystal and then talks about astrology with me.
And that's your first date. That's your first date. She takes a moonstone out of her little pouch and gives it to you because Pisces is ruled by the moon. I would die. Get out of my face.
I would simply have to pass away. Oh my God.
I like too that like I was like reading this other article by like a queer woman who was kind of like giving her opinions on the show, and she was sort of describing it as like she hopes more stuff like Dead to Me comes out as far as like the queerness goes, because it would become this sort of like self-fulfilling prophecy for like future queer people, where like if we keep seeing more stories of there not being like this fancy coming out and more stories where the queerness is casual and nonchalant and not the whole point, that maybe people won't feel so suppressed with their queerness and they won't feel such pressure to come out all the time, and they won't think it like is their whole personality and their whole identity.
Believe it or not, Judy and Michelle's relationship is not the entire plot.
Right. Wow.
There's actually bigger things to worry about.
Yeah.
Like a fucking dead body in the pool.
If anything, the relationship is, it's not a plot device in a negative way. I don't want to say it's a plot device and like it was only there to serve the plot, because the relationship was like nice and romantic and pure and everything. But it does like move the plot along, because like Michelle's ex is a lesbian, like, and they still live together, which is a whole other story. But it's like it exists there to move the story along. And like it's integrated into the show. It's not a conflict in and of itself. The gayness isn't a conflict in and of itself. And such I love a that.
Weird stereotype, lesbians who live together post breakup. You remember, have you heard of those two like influencers, American influencers named Kate and May Flowers?
Yes, I know exactly. I knew who you were talking about before you even said it.
I was obsessed with them. I love their Instagram. I thought they were so cute, whatever, whatever. They broke up, I think like last year or something, mm-hmm. or like 2 years ago.
I remember.
Ago, I but they made a video about like their breakup. In their breakup video, they were like, oh, like we're going to live together still because we like it. And like, we're not gonna move out.
Yeah.
And I was like, why?
Did you know Kate Flowers was in a cult? Was like born into a cult? Isn't that crazy? Into like one of the biggest cults.
Which there cult? Are. Really?
The Unification Church, but it's also called the Moonies.
She was in that one?
She was born into it, but I think her parents left when they were like, when her and her brother were really little.
Yeah. I briefly remember that video she made on YouTube about it.
Because her father's gay too.
Really?
Yeah.
But she's by herself.
Mm-hmm. That's how I get introduced to her, actually, is because her and her brother did like a video talking about what it was like growing up like in a cult.
It's crazy.
And like how their parents left the cult.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
It's weird. I think it's weird that they live together post breakup. I don't think I would want that. That's like the home that y'all built together.
Yeah.
Is nothing sacred.
And it's like, especially like with Michelle and Perez, the only reason Michelle like still lives there is like out of guilt, because Perez was like, she was like, oh, they're more like family now. And I understand you were together for a long time and your girlfriend probably got integrated into your family. And like, that doesn't mean she needs to stop talking to your mother. That just means you two shouldn't live together. Like, especially when you have someone over and Perez is making it awkward because you have a girl over.
It's kind of, I just don't like that.
It just feels awkward and like tense. And like, why do you want to?
Maybe it's just me. Maybe a home is just a bundle of things. I don't know. Maybe
I don't know.
Hey, did you hear about that new confirmed Banksy mural?
No.
The Reading Prison, I think in England.
No.
It's on the side of a prison, and it's like a prisoner climbing down from a rope, like those tied bed sheets thing. But at the bottom of the tied bed sheets is a typewriter. He confirmed it yesterday.
Oh my God.
That it was his. Fuck. Isn't that cool? People say that the prisoner, the face of that prisoner coming down the wall, looks like Oscar Wilde, who, as we know, was sentenced to 2 years in that prison, I think, for being gay.
Damn. That's crazy. Remember when Banksy put a portrait in a museum and sold it for millions of dollars and then it immediately shredded in front of everyone's eyes?
I love that. That is a message. I know people don't like Banksy.
I don't like Banksy.
Why?
I think he's pretentious. I don't know. I'm allowed to have an opinion. I don't like him.
I think it's pretty cool that he did that, like, shreddy thing. Because, like, he sold his paintings. He sold that painting for some $1 million, meaning only somebody who had
millions of dollars.
Change of a million some dollars could buy it. Who could buy it, bought it.
Yeah.
Meaning he sold it to a rich-ass motherfucker.
Yeah, who can afford to buy shit, like, right out of a museum.
And then shredded it. Because, like, that sends a message of, like, nobody should have that much money.
Yeah, but by shredding it, and, like, because it got all that attention, that became way more valuable. It didn't lose value because it was shredded, because it was by Banksy.
It's anti-capitalist.
It's not, because it became more valuable because it's Banksy, and Banksy himself is capitalist. Like, that's the thing, is he's kind of a sellout. But this isn't about Banksy. I think he's a sellout.
You think he's a sellout?
For sure.
Who did he sell out to?
That piece became millions of dollars more valuable once he shredded it. It didn't become less valuable.
The majority of his recognized art is art that he produced for free on the side of a random ass building, or on a sidewalk, or on an abandoned building. He sells his paintings for millions of dollars only because people love the mysteriousness of, like, we don't know who this guy is.
Not anti-capitalist.
Wow. If he's selling them for a couple million dollars and then instantly destroying the painting, he doesn't give a fuck about rich people.
Yeah, but he is a rich person.
Yeah, I know.
The man's probably a billionaire by now. And we just don't know who he is. What if it's like...
So there's no ethical way to be a millionaire, even if you're just
millionaire.
Making art?
I think millionaire, not billionaire.
Why can't we just be happy that an artist made it big and then showed a capitalist?
I just want to know who he is.
It wasn't his art in the MoCo Museum in Amsterdam?
Yeah, I think so. Damn, I don't remember.
Yeah, the one with the girl letting go of the balloon on the concrete. Anyways, I thought that was cool. It would be so cool to like have that done in our city or something.
I know. I'm surprised he hasn't yet. But doesn't he work like mostly in Europe? He doesn't do a lot of stuff in the States. Yeah.
For sure. Either way, I'm not like a Banksy stan or anything. I just thought that was really cool. I think his message is cool. Hey, if you've been looking for ways to help out and educate yourself, please visit bicons.podcast.com/resources.
Here you'll find Black Lives Matter, First Nations support, and LGBTQI plus outreach.
Do your part.
There's always a way to help. I thought it was cool, too, that, like, even though Linda Cardellini, as far as we know, is, like, a straight woman in real life, even though she's, like, a queer icon, you know, to people, I thought it was cool that Michelle, a.k.a. Natalie Morales, is, like, a queer woman who's, like, my God. Look, that's why everything's shocking. That's why everything's shocking us.
How does he not get shocked?
He does. When I touch him, I get shocked, so he probably gets shocked, too.
It doesn't bother him?
Sometimes. If it's really small, not really. I thought it was cool that, like, Natalie Morales herself, like, got to play, who was queer, got to play, like, a queer character and, like, does a lot of queer content, like, outside of Dead to Me and, like, has, she has, like, her own show where she's, yeah, like.
Tell us about that new show.
I believe it's called Abby or Abby's. And she's the lead. Natalie Morales is the lead. And she's bisexual in the show and, like, it's talked about and she's, it's like on a network show too. It's like on NBC or ABC or something like that. And she's one of, like, if not the first openly bisexual, like, canon bisexual leads in a show on a network show like that, besides, like, Clark. Wow. That I can think of. And she's a person of color on top of it. And I just really like how this show has decent representation behind the scenes.
For sure. Yeah. You know?
There's, like, not a man in sight. And if they are, they're gay. Like,
yeah.
And I really like that. And you can tell.
You can definitely tell when a queer or, like, woman-loving woman movie is made by a man.
Oh, yeah.
You can always tell. Not that it's bad. They're never, like, no. I'm not going to say they're bad. But, like, you can just tell.
You can, like, they just kind of miss the mark sometimes. When men write, like, women-loving women stories. Even if it's not, like, male gazey, it's, like, the, like, intimacy between the people, like, isn't quite there. They never write, like, the friendship into the relationship. It's always, like, purely sexual or something like that. Or, like, just attraction. Like, they sometimes, and, like, with this.
They make it about the guy.
Yeah.
They got dumped for it.
And, like, with this, with both, like, Judy and Jen and Judy and Michelle, like, they're friends and they hang out and they laugh. And they talk about their life and they help each other. And then on top of that, they're in a relationship. I really like that.
Why did Michelle abruptly disappear in season 2? Do you think she'll be back in 3?
I think she will be back. But I think she left because that last, the last time we saw her is, like, when her mom was in the hospital. And
yeah.
Perez decided to, like, out Judy's secret about Steve, like, being missing and her being linked to Ted's hit and run. And just, like, aired everyone's dirty laundry. And I think Michelle was just, like, tired of it because Judy had already, like, blown her off before and, like, hurt her and she forgave her. And then she finds out she was lying.
Plus her mother's sick.
Right.
On top of all this.
And she got sick of, like, Perez's shit. So she moved out of the house that they shared. So
Perez gets on my last nerve.
Same.
Why is she so annoying?
She's so, like, uptight.
She's like a wounded puppy. Like, okay, maybe you shouldn't be living with your ex then if you're not comfortable with them bringing someone. I'm so lost. Aren't you a grown-ass woman? You look like you're in your 40s.
It's not right to make your partner and now ex-partner feel responsible for your abandonment issues. Sorry. That's not her. It's not her responsibility. She should have empathy for you, but she shouldn't feel obligated to stay with you and stay around you and live with you.
You can't give her, like, sad eyes when she, like, tries to live her own life. Why else did y'all break up? To live different lives, right?
And you shouldn't treat her guests like shit and, like, make them feel awkward.
That was so gross. But it was also really funny.
It was kind of funny.
I think Jen Harding is, like, a comfort character of mine. I don't have many.
Yeah.
At all. But she's, like, I relate to her so much.
She's so relatable. Like, hashtag relatable.
I hated the way you said that.
But she is.
I love her so much. Mm. She's like soft. She's like trying. But she's also hard and like, I will kill you and punch your balls and murder you. I love her. She's so like fiercely loyal and like, I don't know. I love her so much.
And you can tell that like she, I think the thing I related to with her the most is, like, she isn't really comfortable with, like, other emotions besides, like, anger. And that's, like, how her grief has been, like, portrayed, and, like, how it's coming out of her is, like, in anger. And yeah. I really like that they made it a point that Jen doesn't care that, like, society doesn't accept her grieving process because it's her grief, and, like, I get to do this my way. And, like, she always calls out the fucking bitch of a grandmother about inserting herself into, like,
micromanaging her life.
And it's, like, weird. Saying everything is theirs. Like,
yeah,
that's fucking weird to me.
The that's way she why I loved it at the end when Judy bought her out of the title.
I love that scene where, what's her name? When Judy, like, gets her paintings back and she busts the back out of them and all the, like, millions of dollars start flying out.
Such a good, it's very genre non-conforming, the show, but it's, like, thriller, but also drama and mystery.
Yeah.
It's very mystery. It's very Knives Out.
Yeah.
But it's fucking, like, it's such a feel-good show. You really bond with the characters, both of them.
I like that they kind of, like, bury the lead sometimes. Like, there's never just, like, one big bombshell. There's, like, little mini landmines, like, throughout the seasons. And so there's so many, like, twists and turns and shit like that. So it's never boring. And I always just, like, want to watch all 20 episodes all the way through, like, in one sitting.
I could rewatch this again and again. Yeah. When we first finished the season finale to the second season, mm-hmm. we, like, both, our jaws were, like, on the floor. We were, like, speechless for, like, a good 10 minutes.
Just, like, you've got to be kidding me.
So I was like, yeah. Oh, I love it.
The whole, like, quality of the show is just amazing.
Decadent.
The soundtrack makes it.
Oh my God.
Love it.
Peggy Lee's It's a Good Day when you're like raging.
Yeah.
Fuck. So good.
I get it stuck in my head every single time.
You said it was similar to the Umbrella Academy soundtrack.
It really reminds me of that.
So accurate.
It has the same like feeling where they use like really jovial music to intense scenes and shit like that. And I fucking live for that. I love it so much.
Yes. Fuck yes. Old happy music to when you're feeling depressed and angry.
Yeah. I read not all of it because it was very long and I have ADD. But I read Natalie Morales's like somewhat of a like coming out letter. It wasn't necessarily a coming out letter, but it was more of like almost like an op-ed type of read. That she published on Amy Poehler's website. And I don't know, it was like really nice to hear. And I think a lot of people could relate to it because she talked about like how this is something that she's been dealing with for like literally her whole life for as long as she could remember, how like she actually had crushes on girls in elementary school, but she mistook it for like being jealous or just wanting to be like around the girl and like just wanting to be her friend. Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she told like this really kind of like heartbreaking story. She had this best friend in high school and they actually had feelings for each other and they started like seeing each other in secret. And how like eventually they broke up because the girl friend wasn't okay with like Natalie not being okay with being out, and like they got caught by Natalie's parents. And then we find out that all of this is because of like Catholic religious guilt, which is like a really big thing. And, like, her feeling dirty and, like, ashamed for it because she got caught, because she grew up in the church.
And causing you to perform heteronormativity.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, thinking you're going to, like, burn in hell during the rapture, like, for being gay. Like,
yeah.
And
a lot of faiths make you feel like that, not just, obviously, Catholicism, yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, we just watched Disobedience before we recorded for the first time. And that's pretty much what the entire movie was about.
What a trip.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's good, though. Sex scene was A1.
And I feel like Natalie's description, like, in her letter about, like...
Bless you.
Her description in her letter about just identifying as queer, not necessarily, like... I'm not necessarily bi or lesbian, kind of, like, goes back to Judy. Because I feel like that's how I see Judy. Like, I mean, we can say bisexual, but like, I feel like maybe she would just like identify as queer. Like, maybe she's pan. Maybe she's like, oh, I'm just not free straight. Spirit. Yeah.
That's how I would say it in middle school.
Yeah.
I'm just a free spirit. I'm just like anybody. Like, I just don't like
people.
Yeah, just like. Oh my gosh.
I remember like, I've heard that a couple times. Like, Brooke in Orange is the New Black said the same thing. She's like, I'm not, or I don't fall in love with like bodies. I fall in love with people. And there was like another character in Sense8 that was like, I don't fall in love with people's genitals. I fall in love with people. And like, I don't know.
That's how you should be really falling nice. In love, to be honest.
Yeah, shit. Yeah.
Can you believe the writers really wrote this and just said, yeah, just gals being pals.
Gal pals, roommates.
Gal pals. And they were roommates. No, but they really are. And I love that.
They're co-parents. Like, even if they're not, I feel like at the end of the day, even if Jen and Judy don't end up together, they're still, like, platonic life partners.
It could literally go left or right.
Yeah. And I'd be happy either way. Which either is also way, nice.
Either way, Henry is going to be gay. Don't leave that
1,000%.
Do not.
1,000%.
I love him with all my heart. Why is he so sweet? He's so cute. If I ever had a kid, I won't. If I were ever an auntie to a kid, I would hope that he's like Henry.
Charlie so grew sweet. On me like in the second half of the second season because he really did like stand up for his mom and he like came him. Through.
Yeah. No, I love Charlie.
Yeah.
He's an asshole prick dick and a half, but I love him.
He's a real one.
He's very loyal. Yeah. He really loves his mom.
They're exactly the same. Sorry, I didn't mean to take the words right out of your mouth, but they are. They're exactly the same.
Same person.
I really just like the family structure, like as a whole. Like, it's not a good thing that their dad died, but I feel like they would have grown up in like such an unhealthy, like unhappy household because clearly the parents like hated each other and now they have like two loving moms. You know, and I just think that's nice.
Family. Family who, like, oh, randomly, coincidentally killed each other's spouses. I love that. I mean, I don't.
Jesus, wink, wink.
Don't leave that in.
I think that's all we got. Everyone should watch Dead to Me on Netflix. It's amazing.
And also Disobedience.
Jeez. What was the Letterboxd review?
Oh my god, hold on. Okay, before we let you go, I have to read you. This is so off topic, so unrelated. I'm so
If sorry. I had to hear it, so did you.
I want
to
watch The Princess Diaries. Sorry. Okay, keep going.
Fantastic idea. Fuck.
Okay, before we let you go, I just have to read this one, just this one short review from Disobedience, which is like a gay yearning. Mm-hmm, very, mm-hmm. very yearn, very gay. Very yes, yearn, very gay. Yes, yes. Movie with Rachel McAdams and Rachel Weisz. Jizzing in Peaches is review by user Brat Pitt on Letterboxd. I love you. Shout out Brat Pitt on Letterboxd. Jizzing in Peaches is so last year. In 2018, we're spitting in each other's mouths like adults.
Ugh.
What? Yes. Put that on a t-shirt.
Del Bar made me rewind the scene.
Shut the fuck up. Well, obviously, we're not leaving that in. Yes, I did make you rewind the scene, and what about it? Mm-hmm. It was the best scene in television. 2017 is the best year in history for that shit.
My God.
Anyways.
What was our small business shout-out again?
Tanuki Studio. It's a shop on Etsy. It's actually run by a friend of ours. Shout-out, Jamie. Love you, bitch. Tanuki Studio is an Etsy shop where you can buy custom-made Funko Pops. Literally anybody. It could be somebody in your life or a character you really like on television that they haven't made a figure of yet. Your boss, your coworker, your fucking dog. It's like she's very talented, makes her own custom packaging. It's customizable from top to bottom, handmade, and she has hella good reviews. Probably like the best reviews I've ever seen on an Etsy shop. Go off. If you're looking for a great gift, head over to Tanuki Studio. Wow.
Wow.
Small business shout out. Wow. And there you have it, folks. Go watch Dead to Me.
Yes, please. And we will let you know what we're doing next time on Instagram. What are we doing?
What?
We're doing I Care a Lot, aren't we?
What?
We're doing I Care a Lot next?
Yes. Next episode, we're going to be talking about I Care a Lot with Rosamund Pike.
fuck. And Isa Gonzalez.
How could we
ever marry me?
Literally.
Literally.
She is the plot.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Vicons podcast. Music by DaVinci_Beats. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and share. It helps us a lot.
To keep up with new episodes, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok @Vicons Podcast and Twitter @Vicons Pod. See you next time.